Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 20th. I'm Ray Graff. With the end of 2018 approaching, now is a good time to start thinking about your tax and financial situation. And with last year's federal tax overhaul, there may be some surprises when filing. Here to help answer your questions are Judy Cahy and Jim Cole of BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. Also in the studio today is Thomas Brockley of RBC Wealth Management. To join the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you may email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Deductions, withholdings, 1040s, your calls, all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. As 2018 nears a close, many may be thinking about their taxes and financial situation heading into the new year. Last year's federal tax overhaul may impact your upcoming tax filings. So we have a trio of tax and financial experts in the studio to answer your questions. Judy Cahy is a tax partner at BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. She is a certified public accountant with nearly 20 years of tax experience. Jim Cole is also a tax partner with BST. He has more than 25 years of public and private financial tax and accounting experience. And then there's Thomas Brockley, Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor, and Senior Portfolio Manager with RBC Wealth Management. He has more than 30 years of experience in the financial sector. So let's see, let's add it up, 20, 45. We have about 75 years experience here in the studio. Judy, Jim, and Thomas, welcome to Vox Pop.
Thank you.
Afternoon.
Are you all excited? You sound pretty thrilled.
You didn't have to add that up like that, Ray.
The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your taxes or finances, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. All right, let's throw this to Judy and Jim right away, and that's the tax overhaul. And when I file my taxes, and we all file our taxes, what changes are we going to expect? What's the big one that will hit us?
The biggest one that'll hit you is the change in the standard deduction. So oftentimes people are used to itemizing deductions, being able to deduct their mortgage interest, their property taxes. So we have some new rules in play, and one of those rules significantly limits the state tax deduction to $10,000.
This is what they call SALT.
SALT. So with a $10,000 cap on that and a new enhanced standard deduction, which is nearly double the amount, many people will find that they're now claiming a standard deduction and not itemizing any longer.
Jim?
Yeah, the big thing was from the business side, twofold. One was the corporate tax rate decrease from a graduated rate that went up to 35% to a flat 21%. And then on the individual side for the businesses was this new, what they call qualified business income deduction, a 20% deduction for those businesses that are structured as partnerships, S corporations, even sole proprietors, these what they call flow-through businesses. That's going to be a big one in the business community.
In your estimation, is this a plus for the small business owner?
It's a huge plus.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, if somebody was making a net profit in their closely held, pass-through business, $150,000. In an oversimplification of it, they're going to get a $30,000 deduction and potentially only pay tax on $120,000 of income and not the $150,000.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about taxes, large or small, 800-348-2551. Judy Cahy is here. Jim Cole also here from BST. Thomas Brockley from RBC Wealth Management here to answer your questions. Thomas Brockley, how are things going with you? The markets they don't look so good today.
Past few weeks, obviously, we've seen some real volatility, pre-election issues popped up.
But now the election is over.
The election was over.
And it's not so good.
The day after, we had a big pop. I think what we're seeing is I equate it to that snowball coming down the hill. When people start to get nervous, they make rash decisions. And like we always have said before in the show, and you really need to step back during times like this and not make panic decisions.
And how long do you think it will be before people start pushing the snowball back up the hill?
That's hard to say. I mean, realistically, none of the financials are different than they were a month ago. And all of a sudden, there's a selling point, right? And I think that gets back to the issue of it's never a good time to start planning the rainstorm when you're in the middle of the rain.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you look at things, which is a good reason why year-end planning, which is the discussion today, you really want to constantly look at where you're at. If you're taking too much risk in a portfolio, if it's not, appropriate for your risk tolerance or your objectives. People tend to want to be in an area where they're growing right up until the day they don't need to grow anymore. And
yeah.
You're better off far in advance of that happening, trying to take a little risk off the table.
Well, let's go to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551. We go to Ava in Kingston. You're on.
Hi. About 2 years ago, we're still dealing with it. We got a very large tax return from New York State, and they wouldn't give it to us. They said that they needed to see more information and that they weren't going to give it to us. So we supplied our receipts for both sole proprietors, our receipts, you know, what we had kept. And they basically told us that it wasn't enough. Now, there's no one that you can call. There's no one that you can discuss anything with. And so basically they're withholding our taxes, and our accountant has said that they will most likely continue to scrutinize our returns and not give us our return. So I'm just wondering, is there anything we can do, or how do we proceed?
Okay.
So, Eva, it sounds like you're in a desk audit situation. Do I understand you correctly that maybe you filed a tax return that had a substantial refund and they're not issuing that to you?
That's correct.
Okay. So, first of all, I would, place a phone call to New York State to try to get a hold of the person who's conducting that audit and get more information that way. If normal channels do not work, there is such a thing as a New York State taxpayer rights advocate where you could call in to the advocate and ask these questions and get help with the answers through that means.
Okay. I mean, we've tried to call. We've never been able to get a person or have any sort of personal connection to anyone. But you're saying that should be available.
That should be available. Sometimes when it's a desk audit scenario, it's a little bit hard to reach back and get the person on the phone, but you should be able to call and get a connection with them to at least be able to get a status of what's going on and what information they feel is outstanding.
Okay. I mean, one thing I think they're denying us, we had a child during that time, and I think we get a credit because of having a child, and I sent them the birth certificate. And it seems like they can't deny us that tax credit, but maybe it's because they feel like they can't verify our income according to what we gave them.
Yeah, I think it sounds like we're lacking some communication here with them in terms of what the status is and what's holding it up. So best bet is to try to get a person who can talk to you within the desk audit bureau.
Okay. Ava, thanks for the call and good luck. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey, Jim Cole, and Thomas Broccoli here as we talk year-end planning and financial thinking here as we wrap up 2018. Let's go over to Lou. Lou in Middletown, you're on.
Hi. Hey, quick question. By the way, you're coming in very clear in the Hudson Valley here.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, there's a $24,000 standard deduction. If you take that, is there anything else you can claim, like medical or taxes that you pay on your house or anything like that, or that takes all that into consideration?
Yeah, the new standard deduction is kind of an either-or. So you take a look at your itemized deductions, and as we mentioned slightly before, that the state and local taxes, that's your real property taxes and your personal income taxes, they're going to limit that to $10,000. They're going to let you take that. They're going to let you take your home mortgage interest. They're going to take your charitable contributions. Those are the predominant ones. For some people who, especially, let's say, uninsured people, who may have a significant enough medical unreimbursed medical expenses to cross over the threshold. But the medical expense deduction is a tough one to get to. The amount has to exceed 7.5% of your income, and so a lot of times it's not there. But in the end, it's either or. It's the $24,000 if that's a married filing joint return, or it's the combination of these allowed itemized deductions.
Now, my other question is, if you take the other itemized deductions, a year or two ago, you can get $4,000 for you and your wife. Can you still do that, or that totally disappeared and you're just on the other deductions, if you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think you might be referring to the personal exemptions, and the personal exemptions went away. There's no exemption deductions for yourself, for your spouse, or for children. All of that was eliminated, and then they expanded this comprehensive, what they call still the standard deduction.
Right. That makes it a little tougher because then you're $8,000 to the minus from the old way of doing things. All right. So basically you answered my question. I appreciate it.
All right.
And you guys are doing a good job. And by the way, I once used a federal IRS advocate in Albany. They did a great job for me, so I would recommend using an advocate whenever you can, but I had to personally go there to talk to somebody. But thank you again.
Thanks, Lou. We appreciate the call. The number is 800-348-2551. We talk taxes today. Judy Cahey, Jim Cole, Thomas Broccoli are here, and you are there. So why don't you give us a call, 800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Thomas Broccoli of RBC Wealth Management is here. And Jim Cole and Judy Cahey of BST. They're here to answer your financial and tax questions. And let's go right back to the phones. And we go to Robert in Great Barrington. Robert, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you. I have a question regarding a gift made by a foreign national. As I understand it, gifts made by foreign nationals are tax-free in the United States. I don't know if there's any amount limit or not, but my question really is, in spite of the fact that it might be tax-free, does one have to file?
Okay.
No, typically on gifts, they're not taxable income, so to the recipient, it's not a reportable item. The gift tax reporting, goes to the donor when whether or not they have to file a gift tax return. I'm not sure that a foreign national would have any U.S. reporting requirement for.
I mean as far as the recipients.
Yeah.
In this case, it's a wedding gift of $50,000, so it's a substantial amount, and I was wondering if one had to file this. In spite of the fact that it is tax-free as the recipient,
No, you would not have to report that from an income tax standpoint.
I see. So there's no filing necessary. Okay.
There is such a form as an annual return for a person in a foreign country who gives a gift to a U.S. taxpayer. The threshold for filing that typically kicks in at about $100,000.
Huh.
So if the gifts for the collective year hit $100,000, there's an informational reporting requirement by the U.S. person receiving that gift.
That's what I meant. So is there a special form for that?
Yeah, it's a form 3520.
3520. Great. Thank you very much. Been very helpful.
Thank you, Robert. We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. And Trent in Averill Park. Trent, you're on.
I think it's Fred.
Oh, Fred. It says Trent, but we'll call you Fred if that's what you like. All right, you're on.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. Following that same line of questioning concerning gifting, I read the rules, the IRS rules for 2018 gifting. I just want to make certain that I understand them correctly. I believe that both myself and my wife would be allowed to give up to $15,000 each to my son. And I believe I could also give, my wife and I could both give my daughter-in-law $15,000 each as well. So that would be a total of $60,000 without having to report or file information forms. Is that correct?
That is correct. Now, keep in mind, you know, that is the filing threshold to file a gift tax return. You also have such a thing as a lifetime exemption of about $11 million. So you can exceed that.
I will reach that in my life.
All right. Well, thanks, Fred. We appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Have a good one. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number. Sheila in Schenectady. Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My husband and I have LLC. We have a couple rental properties. I've never used an LLC on my TurboTax. I just claimed it as income when they ask about the properties we own. I want to know, how can I go about turning my regular TurboTax tax form into be able to use my LLC and get the business credit you were talking about a little while ago, the small business, changing the threshold for small business? Is that something you would know working with TurboTax or not?
Well, I mean, there's a couple aspects of that question. You indicated that this is an LLC that's owned by you and your spouse, right?
Correct.
Right. It's not a critical issue and stuff, but the technical issue of it would be that the government considers that a partnership and in theory would like to see a partnership tax return. But in the end, that income would still flow back to your individual return. So I'm not sure that that's a big item to worry. Now, with the LLC, you've got two routes to go. I mean, you can leave it as a flow-through entity, which in the general rule, I would tell you probably to leave it that way. But you could convert the LLC into a corporation and use the corporate income tax rate of 21%. But however, I think in the long term, and again, without knowing your specific facts, but I think in the long term, generally, owning real estate in an LLC like you have is a good place to have it. Having the income flow through to your personal return, so that it's taxed at your individual return. I would suspect that these rental properties and the income from it would qualify for this 20% qualified business income deduction that's new for 2018 returns. TurboTax is probably going to be able to do it, but it's a new form and it's certainly a higher level of sophistication, you may find that you're not getting to the right answer.
So best to check with a tax advisor.
Yeah, I think in your situation, because of the complexity of that element, it probably is worth looking into having an advisor do it.
That's great. Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Thanks, Sheila. Thanks for the call. And over to Dan in Connecticut. Dan, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? They keep saying there's a $10,000 limit for state taxes. Now, I pay $10,000 for property tax and probably about another $12,000 for state tax. Now, me and my wife both work. Do we get a higher amount because there's two of us having income, or is it just limited cap for the two of us?
It is capped to the $10,000 collectively. It will not be $10,000 each.
What if we file separately?
On a married filing separate, they prorate it.
It's
$5,000 each. They prorate it to each.
Okay, so I'm going to lose about $2,000 in deductions.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to lose a little more than that, actually, because you were talking about having a combined about $22,000 of state and local taxes. You're only going to get $10,000 on your return.
They're still going to only limit with the property taxes to a $10,000?
Yeah, you hear about this SALT, that's state and local taxes. So that covers both your state income taxes as well as your local property taxes.
Woohoo! Gotta love Connecticut.
Yeah, the only positive that you may see, because there was a lot of talk about the whole loss of these state and local tax deductions, but a lot of people, certainly in the higher tax states here in the Northeast and on the coast, were paying alternative minimum tax before, and you're going to find if you were before, you're not now, and your tax situation may still end up better than you think.
Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Dan. The number here is 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey, Jim Kohler here from BST, a tax advisory firm in Albany, and also Thomas Brockley, who is a senior vice president over at RBC Wealth Management. This is getting to be the busy time for you too, Tom, yeah?
Yeah, year end, a lot of things happen with retirement plans for required minimum distributions. And with the tax law changes this year, there's been a lot of question about charitable contributions, not only from the donors that I deal with, but from the charitable organizations that I also work with, who have become a little bit worried about with the confusion. There's been some donors typically that are saying we have to hold on and see how this works. And sometimes you don't go get your tax information to your tax preparer or to your tax accountant until the first of the year. And
so there's some real nervousness among charitable organizations.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. We have tax professionals here and we have an investment guy here. For the rest of us, it's all very murky, these tax changes. And I don't think any of us really are going to know until we file and then we realize, oh, my God, it's either good or not so good. We did when these tax changes came down, there was a calculator, and I did the calculation to see what exemptions I should still take on my, and everything worked out good, at least I think so. And I'm going to find out really soon, and it's a little scary. Let's go over to Mike. Mike in Richmond. Mike, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I have a quick question about RMDs, which one of your guests just mentioned. I have a Roth 401k account as well as a Roth IRA. I'm no longer contributing to the 401k side, and I've learned in my research that if I leave it in that account, it becomes part of my calculations when I eventually have to take my required distributions. However, if I roll it into a Roth IRA, it is no longer part of my calculation. And it just sounded fishy, but I wanted to make sure.
Don't all jump at once.
So you have a 401k with a Roth provision you're contributing to.
Correct.
Which would be a post-tax contribution. And you're
correct.
Being told that if you don't roll that to a Roth IRA, that you'll have to include it in an RMD calculation for your typically traditional retirement assets?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to be deflected over to the tax folks, but I don't think that seems to make too much sense.
Yeah, right. I'm puzzled with it a little bit as well. I don't know if they're talking about that under the 401k and under the employer-sponsored plan, whether or not it's kicking out a required distribution out of the company plan. Now, sometimes that can roll from the plan into an IRA. But
yeah, I've never heard that. Right. I've never heard that the time that I've done.
Can I ask an easier question then about a 529 account?
Yep.
Okay, super. So my daughter set one up for my daughter. Long story short, she didn't need it. So if she takes those funds and opens an account for one of her children, is that considered a taxable event?
It's that depends on the state where the 529 was taken out, because there's rules that vary, I believe, state to state.
Okay. It would be New York.
But typically, you can have those funds transferred down to a sibling or a child.
Yeah, I think you're gonna be able to execute on the strategy. It may be a question of how it's done. You're not going to want the funds to flow to your daughter, because that will be a distribution. But there are provisions for changing the beneficiaries on the account, and so you can change to your grandchild.
Yeah, there was some talk about when you skip a generation, you have tax implications, but I guess that's not what you guys are telling me.
Well, there's potential what they call generation skipping tax issues. But again, Judy mentioned earlier in the show about this $11 million threshold for estate and giving. That applies to the generation skipping as well. So So I doubt that the generation skipping aspect of that would come into play. I think, I would contact, the 529 plan and say, okay, well, we want to do X. We want to get either the beneficiary changed to my grandchild, and I would like to change the custodian to my daughter. And I think they'll be able to talk you through how to do that without tax consequences.
Was that a direct plan you set up direct with the state?
It was set up through the New York Saves program, yes.
So that's the J.P. Morgan's now running that. J.P. Morgan is the managed. So you can call their number. They could actually give you an answer pretty quickly on that.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Taxes today. Judy Cahey, Jim Call, and Thomas Brockley here to answer your questions. And whoops, wrong button there. Don't worry, Zach, the engineer. That's just me hitting the wrong button. Phyllis in Saratoga, you're on.
Hi there. My question has to do with the using the required minimum distribution as a way to give to charities. What wording, because I have several charities that I like to support, small ones. Is it true that if you assign your RMD and have it go directly, paid directly to the charity, then it does not count as income to you? And in addition, you could take a tax deduction as a charitable gift. Can you do both?
Judy.
No, it's not double dipping. So the terminology for it is a qualified charitable distribution. So you tell the charity that you want to make a qualified charitable distribution so that when they issue your 1099 at the end of the year, they reflect it as such. And they basically pay that distribution directly over to the charity. And when you do your tax return, you receive the 1099 in the mail. It indicates, basically the coding that it's not taxable income to you, but you also do not get a separate deduction for it. It's just excluded. And when you exclude it from your gross income, that saves you sometimes in some of the threshold calculations of other things. It's beneficial not to have that AGI be a little bit higher, your gross income.
Okay, great. So then the correct phrase is qualified charitable distribution. Is that it?
Correct. QCD. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Phyllis. 800-348-2551, the number here on Vox Pop. And Dave in Latham. Dave.
Hi. I have a question about dividend investing. And my question is, if you invest in a regular stock, my understanding is that you will get, and it pays a dividend, you'll get a dividend on some kind of regular basis. You'll get a check for that. And I wondered if you invest in a income-oriented ETF or an income-oriented index fund, does one get a regular payment, every year or quarter or whatever, or not? Do you get income payments on a regular basis?
Yeah, you as you mentioned, individual stocks, if they have a dividend, usually paid quarterly, and you can receive a check. And in some cases, you can reinvest the dividend. But nowadays, with the rule changes and, frankly, the accounting costs, they've determined that the dividend has to equal a certain value before you can reinvest. So that's changed slightly in the past several years. And on ETFs or any type of whether it's any type of ETF, whether it's income-driven with fixed income assets within or equity, they'll typically have a dividend that's either quarterly or annual. And you can receive that in the form of a check, or you can have that reinvested. It's a little easier to reinvest an ETF dividend than it is an individual stock.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Dave. We appreciate it. The number is 800-348-2551. Thomas Brockley is here from RBC Wealth Management. Jim Cole and Judy Cahey here from BST. And we welcome your calls. Let's take one more before our next break. Charles in Pittsfield. Charles, you're up.
Hi. I have a question about Social Security income. Is that still in effect for people to get Social Security income? There's like a test. It's called like a means test to see if that income is taxable or not. That's my question.
Okay.
Well, Social Security retirement benefits is not means tested. I mean, that's based on your earning history, and that's paid out. So there's no means testing for that. The question of whether or not it's taxable will depend on the other sources of income. For some people, Social Security is partially taxable. For many, it's not taxable at all.
I guess they probably said that wrong. I apologize. There's like on line 20A and 20B of the 1040 form, like on last year's form, you take half your Social Security income, add the rest of your income to that. If that amount, if you're single and your income is less than $25,000 a year, your Social Security income is not taxable. Is that rule still in effect? Is that calculation still done?
Yeah, the calculation didn't change under the law. So the same provisions still apply. It goes through and, as it is added with other income to determine whether and what portion of it is taxable.
Did the limit change?
Right, very good. So that's my question answered. Thanks for your help.
Thomas, you were saying?
I was just curious as to whether the limit on that changed from 25,000 with the new rule.
Jim, Judy, before we take a break, any answer on that one?
No, I don't believe it did change.
All right, let's take a quick break here. 800-348-2551. Judy Cahey, Jim Cole, and Thomas Brockley here to answer your tax questions and end-of-year financial planning. 800-348-2551. We'll be back with the home stretch. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim Cole and Judy Cahey of BST, an advisory tax and accounting firm in Albany. Also, Thomas Brockley is here from RBC Wealth Management, and we welcome your calls here on this, the last 15, 16 minutes of the program. We'll try to get to as many questions as we can. We go to Diane in New York. Diane.
Hi. I'm calling about I got my Social Security disability settlement this year.
Okay.
And then I also got inherited IRA from my sister's passing.
All right.
I was wondering if either one of those is tax deductible this year. Or I have to pay taxes on either one of them.
Well, the inherited IRA, most likely, yes. I mean,
that's a Roth.
It was a Roth. Okay. Well, then the non-taxability of that would continue.
Okay.
Social Security disability. Actually, I have to
look that check. Up.
Yeah, yeah. I believe it's still taxable, subject to the same income thresholds that the normal Social Security is.
Well, that was my only income for the whole year.
Okay.
Then it would be unlikely that it's taxable.
Right. So if you're if you're a single taxpayer, that threshold is the same threshold that we talked about last segment with $25,000 of having other earnings in there. So.
Okay.
No, I'm married.
Okay.
And, you know, he has income. He's still working.
Right. So if you file a married filing joint return, then the joint
Correct.
Level that Social Security becomes taxable in that calculation is
$32,000.
Okay. Oh, good, good. Okay. All right. And the other question is, he changed jobs and he talked to a financial advisor about keeping the 401k from his previous employer.
Yep. So what you
is that tax?
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
So
is that taxable?
Well, typically, what you want to do when you leave a job is roll that over to a new retirement account. You don't want to take a distribution on it, because if you take a distribution from that account, it will be taxable to you. So you certainly want to look into rolling that over to another account.
Okay. Well, we talked to – it's in Wells Fargo, and they told us that we had a tax advisor say that it looks good and just leave it alone.
And that probably is fine.
Start a new 401k with his new employer.
Yeah, you can have multiple plans. So, I mean, if the advisor felt that what it was invested in was a good place, the fee load, everything was good, and leaving that one there.
He was 100% invested in everything. He doesn't pay in, and he doesn't get anything out of it.
So. Yeah, that won't be taxable until it's distributed out.
All right, Diane, thanks for the call. And now to Henry in Clifton Park. Henry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about, I have a standard IRA in several different mutual funds, and I have to take a RMD. And one of the funds is not doing as well as the others, and I wondered if I could take the RMD out of that one and leave the money in the others.
You can, if you have multiple IRAs under different account numbers and you have multiple RMDs. There's an RMD calculation on each account, but you can consolidate the total number and take it from one account. Sometimes the IRS gets a little confused about that, but you can do it. So the question that you have about the investment side, so let's say you have five different mutual funds, four are doing well, one's not doing well, and your question is, should you take it all out of the one that's doing the worst? That seems to be what you typically think as an investor, but I don't know that I would take it out of the worst performer. I might take it out of the four that are doing better, unless you really think the fundamentals of that one sector that you're in or one style you're in is a bad place to be.
Uh-huh. Can you explain why?
Well, it's the old adage of buy low, sell high. And if you have gone into that area to begin with, unless it's some specific stock or specific investment that really has a poor outlook, I don't know that I'd want to sell it at the worst time. I'd probably maybe take a peek at that. And do you do your own investing? Do you have an advisor that you work with?
No, I do my own.
Yeah, so based upon how you pick that initial allocation, if you're comfortable with how you decided that allocation was correct, then this is a good time to balance. So if you had five funds and you had 20% in each, I'd probably look at it and say, if you're still comfortable with those five areas of investing, then you would want a withdrawal to get that back to 20% in each fund, which would probably leave very little withdrawal from that poor performing fund, and you'd end up trimming off the ones that have gained.
Okay.
All right, Henry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Steve in Springfield. Steve.
Hello there. I have what I guess is a good problem to have. A couple years ago, myself and three siblings inherited a family vacation home. And over the last 2 years, I have not done anything about deducting it from my taxes. And my question is two-part. One, is there anything that you can do to refile for the last couple of years? And the other question is, do things change drastically with the tax changes that are happening for 201A?
Yes and yes. So starting out with your first question, there's typically a 3-year statute of limitation. So if you realize after the fact that you missed a deduction on your tax return, you typically have a 3-year window to file an amended tax return to correct that. So, you know, I'm assuming that this is a personal use residence and not a vacation property. So you would look to the real estate taxes on the residence that you pay, as well as if there happens to be any mortgage interest or not. So that's that piece to the question. Certainly, you know, under these new rules, and again, going back to that SALT discussion of $10,000 of state income taxes, that's all in. So, for example, it would be the taxes on your primary residence plus your vacation residence. So depending on where you land, you may just end up with a standard deduction. It depends on what else you have going on.
Aha, excellent. Thank you. I'm going to go home, and my wife's going to think I'm way smarter than I really am.
Well, thanks, Steve. We aim to please. Let's see. Dave in Melrose. Dave, you're on.
Hi, yes. We made some 8606 contributions to our IRAs back in the 80s, and I wanted to know if so, how are they reported on 1099-R when we take distributions? And when we get them, how do we report them to the IRS?
Okay.
Yeah, the non-deductible IRAs is often a good strategy. It's a good way to to build some tax-deferred wealth. But it does bring complexity in when you go and take distributions later on. Because
I'm sort of figuring that out.
Yeah. Well, what happens, you know, what they do, I mean, it gets reported basically similar to any other IRA distribution. They give you the amount that you withdrew from there, and then the 1099 will most likely say taxable amount. It'll say not determined. And then you have to do the computation on your, on the 8606, and that takes a look at how much non-deductible contributions you made over your lifetime that you have invested in the account. But then it also takes a look at all of the value in the IRAs, because you may have a combination of IRA amounts that you deducted. You may have rollover IRAs. And what they do as far as this recovery of the non-deductible amount is they take a look at the percentage of your whole IRA value across all of your accounts, and allow you to recover some of that basis as a non-taxable recovery. You find out in many situations that the computation has cost you more than maybe what you saved.
Did you commingle the assets, so all the IRA contributions along with the non-deductible when you first did it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, even in separate accounts, it's a problem.
All right, Dave. Hey, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Still a few minutes left here if you want to jump in with a tax or end-of-year financial question. 800-348-2551. We go to our pal, Patty and Otis. Hello, Patty.
Hey, Ray. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. So my question is regarding a beneficiary IRA that I received this year. Because my father was over 70 and a half when he passed away, it already was, required minimum distributions. So I took the RMD for my share that was needed for the remainder of 2018, but then the company, who I won't name because they're the worst financial company I ever dealt with.
Thank you.
But it's a company that was just talked about. Anyways, they sent me the RMD twice. It's not a lot of money. It's only like $180. And I know that the RMD for me is just a straight taxable income, but my question is, because I took it twice from the same IRA account, is there anything more than it just being income that I'm just going to pay taxes on?
No, that's not going to be a problem. I mean, and inherited IRAs, I mean, you can potentially end up getting the full account distributed. So
right, and it's just taxable income.
Correct.
So I thought that it was fine that they sent it to me twice, because I called them like, why'd you send it twice? Oh, sorry. Whatever. So I just didn't know before I cashed the second.
That can be returned too if you don't want the income. You can go.
Well, it's only $180, right. So it's not a big deal. Because when I said to them, "You already sent me the RMD. I'm going to send you this check back," they were like, "Oh, we're going to have to pull up the recorded things and make." And I was just like, "You know what? Yeah, no. Can't deal." So as long as it's not going to be a penalty, I'm fine.
Yep. All right, Patty. Hey,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gregory in Kingston. Gregory.
Yeah, hi. I've got a portfolio, and I have Obamacare, and I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm expecting more and more medical as I go. I'm 61, and I want to raise some cash and sell off some of my portfolio because I'm not that happy with being invested in the market right now, and. And I'm wondering how that's going to affect me if I go up to the next level of I'm in an essential plan right now.
Well,
it's a tricky question. No one seems to be jumping at this.
The question would be what type of capital gain income would you have from the portfolio withdrawal
that would
potentially affect your health care benefit?
Well, no, he's talking about the premium
cost.
It
would be counted as income, I'm assuming.
Capital gain?
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly going to be taxable income. I don't know all the rules
on
the Obamacare.
That may not be, and I don't, again, not being a tax professional or a health care plan professional,
right.
That may not
who
be.
Who would know the answer to a question like that? Where would I look?
You could look online to actually determine whether the capital gain portion of a portfolio sale would be counted towards your qualifying there? That would be a question for a healthcare insurance professional. Who do you use as an? Do you have an agency or do you go direct?
I go. I use an agency.
So yeah. If you go to that agency, like if you're in New York, you could go to. You could actually call. Any of the major health insurers who would carry that plan, and they could probably give you the answer.
Such as the one that's insuring me.
Correct. And they would know what qualifying issues there are.
All right, Gregory, thanks for the call. This email came in from Sheila, and it to some extent dovetails with the last question. Sheila writes, given that the Trump administration has now canceled the fine for not having health insurance, does that mean that those of us who still have to file previous years get out of paying any kind of fine if we didn't have medical coverage? And that's from Sheila.
No, I mean the withdrawal was for I think 2018 and forward.
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
So no luck there, Sheila. I'm sorry to say. Let's go to Mary in Springfield. Mary, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My son is in his last year of school and he hasn't needed to use his 529. And I'm just wondering if that can be rolled directly to his Roth IRA. They're both at USAA.
No, the 529 plan has separate requirements for distributions and what it can be used for. So you may have to evaluate, you know, how much built-in income is left in the account versus how much was contributed to it to figure out how much taxable income if you take it out, plus the 10% penalty, versus do we leave it in that account and look to use it later on, and potentially maybe much later on for another family member.
Okay, I don't have any other children, but my other question was, do you know if you can use that? He has a school loan from school. Can you use that to start paying the school loan back?
No, again, it's got to be for current year, you know, costs. But
okay, sure.
All right, Mary, thanks for the call. We only have a minute or so here. Let's go over to Ann. Ann is in Kingston. Ann, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick question on self-employed health deduction, health insurance deduction. I was wondering if that's still available in the new, you know, for the 2018 tax return.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Oh, great. And now would that affect my adjusted gross income still to bring it down?
Correct.
It's great. Correct. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, we have time for one more here. Let's go to Monica in Rhinebeck. Monica, you're on.
Hi. I invested $300 in PepsiCo in 1986 and just reinvested dividends. I just cashed in $10,000 of it. How do I deal with cost basis and capital gains on my taxes?
All right. You have 25 seconds, panel.
You're going to need to compile. You're going to get the dividend history, which you can usually get online, and figure out how much dividend income that you've reinvested. The dividend income creates additional basis and reduces the gain. So your gain is going to be the $10,000 you got, the $300 you invested, plus, you know, and you get to subtract all of the dividend income.
Well, good detailed question to end the program. Judy Cahey and Jim Cole of BST, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thomas Brockley of RBC Wealth Management, thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure.
Support comes from Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts, online at anyhydro.com. At Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails, live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. Well, once again, thanks to Judy Cahey and Jim Cole of BST and Thomas Brockley of RBC Wealth Management for being here. Thank you for listening and for some really, really good calls and emails today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jesse King answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, it's our last one before the Thanksgiving break. And Dr. Ron Scharf will be here to answer all of your questions about your kitty cats and your dogs. We call it Pets and Vets. Right now, stand by for news.